You've probably noticed changes here on KALW. More updates throughout the day from our news department, live daily briefings from the governor, and some new shows on our schedule, like Freakonomics and New Yorker Radio Hour. What you don't see is what's going on behind the scenes. Our studio at Burton High School is closed to all but a couple of essential staff members. And the rest of us, well, we're getting comfortable producing radio at home.
David, how are you doing? Do you want to start us off with your update and the newscast update?
Ooh, hang on one second. Let me just plug this in here.
Ben, do you want to go next?
Sure. I did the live newscast this morning, and I was working on department budget stuff.
Sounds good. Janae, how are you doing?
My computer's about to die. Let me plug it up.
Okay.
It's been challenging, but we are getting the kinks out, and we are humbled by this moment and our responsibility to inform and even at times entertain you. But we also need your help. We are not funded by advertising. We are fueled by listeners like you. So if you value KALW and want to support local news, and if you can, consider donating today at kalw.org/donate. And now, we are pleased to present a new collaboration with Manny's, a people-powered, community-minded space at the corner of 16th and Valencia in the Mission. On a typical Friday night, Manny's is buzzing with music, political discussions, and a roster of speakers and performers. But these days, like most businesses, Manny's is closed to the public. Instead, they are presenting a series of virtual conversations with local leaders and thinkers who are trying to make sense of this moment and how we will recover. To keep you civically engaged while we are sheltered in place, KALW is airing a new Welcome to Manny's every Friday evening. Tonight, founder Manny Akutiel talks with New York Times tech columnist Kevin Roos about how the pandemic is shaping how we connect and the best ways to use technology during the quarantine. All of these conversations take place on Zoom. In this case, Manny is in his kitchen, and Kevin Roos, in keeping with tonight's theme, he's chosen a Matrix-themed virtual background. And now, welcome to Manny's.
Is your picture, the hacking of the mainframe, is that from The Matrix? That's from The Matrix, right?
No, I just searched hacking the mainframe on Google.
So this is a very important first question to start off with, Kevin. What was the best Matrix movie?
I think the original. I'm sorry. I'm a purist.
You're a purist. So that says a lot about you. I'm kind of a Matrix number three kind of gal. I like big drama. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I don't want to do the damn intro, Sam. I'm sorry. We're just going to go right into it, Kevin. That okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
So you are a New York Times columnist, and you live in the Bay Area.
I do.
You write about business and technology.
True. Three for three.
And we are going to talk about technology to use whilst in quarantine.
Great. Like the one that we're using right now.
Yes. So I have two things I wanted to talk about. So the first set of things I want to talk to you about is how you think people are using technology differently and how it's affecting the use of technology. And then the second thing I want to talk about is specific tools that you think are really awesome and cool to use. And also like just like how-tos on how to best use technology and not to use technology during this time of quarantine.
There's a lot there.
What are the best tools that you feel like people should be using, or apps or technological stuff? During quarantine.
I'll just describe what I use. And I have like a very broken relationship with technology, so I don't know that I would recommend my routine. But I think I've been tweaking it and adjusting it for quarantine, and I think I've found a couple of things.
Okay.
The first is that I do not do this one, but I recommend it to other people, is that you separate your workspace from your life space. I live in a house. We don't have like a separate office room. Right. So I have my rig set up on my dining room table, with like my, 27-inch monitor and my standing desk, attachment thing. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to separate work from life when you're working at home.
Yeah.
So if you can, if you have the space for it, I always suggest to people that they put their work rig in a different room than they do social things in.
Yeah.
There's been some research that suggests that people who work from home tend to work longer hours, in part because it's hard to separate.
I thought I would be like chilling out a lot, but no, not a lot of that at all.
I thought so too, and I have been working so freaking hard.
I got these big books. I'm like, I can read Team Arrivals finally. I'm going to get a six pack. Nope.
Just working a lot more. But I do think there are things that you can do to sort of curb that. So for example, I use this app called Freedom, which I think a lot of writers use. It basically like shuts off your access to certain websites.
Okay.
And say, I don't want GChat for the next 2 hours or something.
It's an app?
Yeah, it's an app. And you can get it for your phone or your laptop. So that's how I've been sort of enforcing willpower on myself, is that I'll say like, after 9 p.m., I don't want Twitter. Please no more Twitter, because I can't sleep. I end up like doom surfing for hours.
Is that really a thing? Doom surfing?
Wow. I mean, don't you feel like that's what you've been doing?
I'm trying quite hard to not doom surf. So I only let myself check your publication, the New York Times, like 3 times a day. Once in the morning, the afternoon, at night, that's it. And that's the only surfing I do.
Yeah, it's good to sort of quarantine that part of your news consumption, because it can take over your life and makes it very hard to sleep.
Yeah.
So those are two tools. Other things I'm doing, I bought, just before the quarantine went into effect, I got an Oculus VR headset. Mm. Here, I'll grab it real quick.
Okay.
So I throw this thing on.
What does it feel like? What's going on in there?
Well, so it's got a bunch of apps. Here's my dog.
Hi, dog. Not
a virtual reality dog, actual dog.
He's so cute.
He's in the mainframe with me. So on VR, I've been doing some games. I use this fishing app I'm trying to silence these texts. So you cast your little reel, and then you can reel in the perch or the trout or whatever. Okay. So I can spend a couple hours doing that.
Is that expensive? How much is that thing?
I think this thing was like $199.
Sorry, my rice is ready. Okay, go back.
It's not something I'd want to do all the time. Like, it kind of hurts after a while. You get like headaches. But for a little fishing to take the edge off, it's been good.
Okay.
I've also started doing virtual workouts. I think a lot of people have been doing those.
Okay, what does that look like?
You just pull up a video of YouTube, or there are various apps. This is just like normal internet workout.
I thought, I was like, you have to put the Oculus on to work out? Come on.
Yeah, maybe. Although I feel like I'm working out when I'm fishing. I guess you get a little like arm training there. There is a meditation app for the Oculus, which I love, because you can just like go to the beach and you can sit on the beach and it like leads you through this meditation. Okay. But I was planning to return it, but I think I'm going to keep it. I don't know. It's sort of relaxing.
Yeah. And what are the no's, right? So what are the things you mentioned a little bit with the doom surfing, but like, If you were to give people advice on what apps and what places to stay off of in the digital world, what would you suggest to people?
I mean, in general, I think we're still figuring this out, right? Like, we've never done this before as a society. I think a lot of people, are using what they need to connect with their friends and family.
Yeah,
I've been using, FaceTime, Zoom, Hangouts, like the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think the best way to spend this time is to use the internet to connect and to create, and not just to consume. I think that, there's research that shows that we are happier when we use the internet to, have one-to-one conversations or, small group conversations than when we're just sort of passively scrolling through our feed. So I've been trying to adhere to that myself. I've been trying to like keep my, I do still do a lot of consumption.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember that it's not like the healthiest way to use the internet.
Create and
connect,
not consume. I love that. So technology. A lot of people are talking about the long-term ramifications of all of this usage of technology on society. For those who have the ability to work from home, a lot of us are now using work from home software and also just like on our phones a lot more. You know, Facebook's like having trouble like keeping up with all the demand. Do you think this is a short-term thing and we're going to go back to the way we were using technology before? Or do you think that there are going to be long-term ramifications for all this? Kevin Roos.
Hard to know. I'm not generally the best predictor. But I will say I hope that we... I wrote a column a few weeks ago that was basically like talking about how the coronavirus has sort of taught us all like the right way to use the internet. Which is to connect with family and friends. I mean, it sort of feels like we've been living in the internet that like usually only exists in like TV commercials, you know, where like grandparents are like FaceTiming with their, you know, grandkids and people are surprising each other over, you know, Google Hangouts and stuff like that. That feels more like the way we're living now, which is good. I do think... I'm not convinced that we are all going to say like, this was such a great experiment. We actually don't, you know, need to go outside because the internet's so great. Like, I think if anything, after this, you know, quarantine is lifted, after we can all sort of go resume our normal lives, I think people are going to be really, really hungry for personal connection. Like I, you know, had to go to the gas station today. And I got a visceral thrill when like I went to up to the counter and like talked to the guy because I was just like, I have not seen another human face to face for like days. So I think there'll be an initial period where we're all just like ODing on face to face encounters,
like hugging the shit out of all of our friends.
Totally. I mean, right? Like that's one thing that the past couple weeks have sort of revealed to me is that no matter how good our digital tools are, they're like still not as good as talking to someone face to face.
I mean, I totally understand. I mean, we've probably done 4 or 5 of these kind of interview conversations a day. And, you know, I'm in my kitchen right now and I'm talking to a two-dimensional version of you, which as cool as it is that you're in the mainframe right now, like it will never, ever have the same, you know, viv that it would if you were sitting across from my table. And, you know, I think you're right. I think there will be a rush back to the human interaction. The question is that just going to be, is that a renaissance? Is that like is that something where, you know, it changes the way we think about spaces? I think specifically about like queer nightlife. You know, there was this whole conventional wisdom that queer nightlife was on its dying deathbed, you know, gay bars were closing, Grindr had killed the gay bar. And, you know, in the queer community in San Francisco in the Bay, you know, all I hear is this desire to kind of restore it, you know? And so, I don't know, I'm hoping that we might see a renaissance coming from out of this.
I hope so. I mean, I do think that people understand that there are certain things that are just more fun in person, that, you know, as many Zoom happy hours or, you know, virtual board game nights or whatever. Like these things are great that we're doing right now to get ourselves through this. But like, I don't think anyone is saying like, you know, I want to live here forever. I never want to go outside again. This is great.
Yeah. I want to go back to an article you wrote 2 weeks ago, roughly, which you already touched on this, but I kind of want to dig into a touch more. You said that the coronavirus is showing us how to live online. And then the subject line was, we've always hoped that our digital tools would create connections, not conflict. We have a chance to make it happen. Can you tell us a little bit about what that chance to make it happen looks like and how we do it?
So I spend a lot of time, like, I think for the past couple of years, my beat, the thing that I write the most about has been like, basically people weaponizing social media and doing awful things with it, whether they're trolls or extremists or foreign influence operations, you know, meddling in elections, like all the crazy bad shit that we do to each other on the internet.
Yeah.
And like that stuff, it's still there. But I think in part because a lot of that was happening for the past couple of years, like a lot of the good pro-social behavior kind of got like drowned out. Yeah. And like people didn't do things on the internet because they were like, oh, social media, like that's for the trolls. They kind of like, it was sort of like an abandoned neighborhood where just the awful, you know, like people are just going through and like looting everyone's trash. Like it's, I now feel like there are people who are actually using the internet the way that it was supposed to be used.
Oh my God, tell me about that.
Well, so like a good example is like, you know, right now, if I go on my phone, I probably have like 4 or 5 group texts going from like people in different parts of my life. Mm-hmm. I've got like a neighborhood group text where people, you know, on my block are coordinating, you know, okay, I'm going to the grocery store. Anyone need groceries? Or, you know, I've got some extra masks. Does anyone want them? Mm-hmm. Sort of mutual aid, like, yeah. Use. And I think that's the kind of thing that maybe did happen before, but not in this kind of coordinated and popular way.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing that I'm like, I'm hopeful that that sticks around and that we see if we like, you know, I think the metaphor of like the internet as a physical space is a little tortured, but like if we invest in designing our community the way we want it, like making sure there are, you know, trash cans and, you know, making sure that there are, you know, people sweeping the streets and making sure that, you know, the lawns are well kept. Like if we actually spend time on the internet and invest in it, we can sort of take it back from the trolls and the opportunists and the extremists.
Yeah.
Feel like it, you know, like it used to feel.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm like you, Kevin. I do feel like I have a very love-hate relationship with technology. And I think it's done a lot of good, but also in that it's taken over a lot of our livelihoods, it's done a lot of bad, and not even to mention the political stuff. And I was never the person that used technology to connect with people. If I were, I would call them and I would talk to them. And people always thought it was crazy because that's what I did. I called people. And I have to say, I've had deeper, longer, more meaningful conversations with people all over the country now that I, you know, never would have had before. And I think it is reinstilling hope in me that technology can be a tool to connect with people in a deep way.
Totally. I mean, I love the internet. I grew up on the internet. I, you know, got my first computer when I was like, you know, 11. And I would, you know, go on IRC chat rooms and I would go in message boards and I would spend, you know, hours and hours on AIM just like chatting with everyone I knew. I had online friends. I played online games. Like it was the sort of the core of my social life.
Yeah.
And you know, then, you know, you grow up and you realize like you got to have an offline social life too. So I did that. But I've always been nostalgic for that time when like you could log on, all your friends were there. They were posting their, you know, crazy status, you know, away messages with the song lyrics.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a huge deal. And I've just like wanted to go back there. It seems like a more innocent time and there were people doing horrible things, I'm sure. But for me, it was like, my friends are here. We're all using the same tools. We can all connect even when we're not in the same place. And that's, I think, a very basic function that the internet performs, but that it's gotten harder to see in the past couple of years because of all the bad stuff.
Do you think there's going to be like a rebellion of some kind? Like, you know, we're all doing the right thing and staying in our apartments and we're, you know, we're Zoom calling and Zoom chatting and X, Y, and Z. But what's the point where people are like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I need a hug, you know?
Like just rogue huggers roaming the streets.
Mutinous huggers, basically.
I mean, we'll all start buying those, like, you know, love dolls that, you know, just to hug, not even to like, you know, do anything weird with, but just physical presence. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I think it's really tough to go through life, especially if you're an extrovert, with, you know, very limited social interaction. I don't know. I mean, we've never done this before, like as a society.
You have written a lot about election interference, and you were writing, you've been writing about it as it relates to 2020, you know, until very recently. And I just wanted to bring it up. Like, do you feel like what's going on in the world will increase folks trying to interfere in our elections?
I don't know. I mean, I think part of it depends on how long this lasts, right? Like, if we are still social distancing in November, I don't know what that looks like. I do think, you know, obviously one way to hedge against that risk would be to go to some sort of like vote by mail or even online voting, although I think that's a terrible idea precisely because then becomes much easier for people to interfere. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think what'll be interesting to see is for right now, this is a digital campaign. I mean, no one's having rallies, no one's knocking on doors. Like, this campaign, to the extent it still is happening right now, is happening on the internet. And like, I think we're gonna see how that works. I have some suspicions. I think it'll probably, help Trump because he's got a big incumbency advantage. He's got more social media followers. He's got, you know, this audience of very engaged online people. And he's going on TV every day. So, yeah. But I could see it going a different way too. I don't know.
But then I think you're right. If I'm a campaign manager and I'm raising money and I'm being told your field operation cannot exist for the next 6 months, I'm thinking I'm just doing TV and digital wise. I mean, what else can you, and you know, maybe phone banking at home, but you don't really have a traditional field operation in that scenario.
I think if I were running a political campaign right now, one of the people I would hire would be like a professional Twitch streamer. Like someone who makes a living broadcasting themselves on the internet. It sounds sort of weird, but like, I think that skill of like, I mean, you know, you saw sort of Joe Biden's like press conference the other day that he held in his, you know, in his house. It looked like TV on the internet, you know, in this way that was like sort of off-putting. It was like, why are you standing at a podium? Like, why are you reading off a teleprompter? Like, it just felt, this doesn't feel like YouTube. This feels like TV on YouTube. And so I think if I were a campaign right now, I would be trying to help my candidate connect with voters across the internet. And the way that you do that is not the same way that you do it in person or on TV. Go play Minecraft or something on Twitch for an hour.
You know, the use of press conferences right now, I don't think I've watched so many political press conferences. And I have to say, like, Andrew Cuomo has done such a good job of using the press conference as a way of engaging people. And now everyone feels like they got to do their own press conference to kind of compete. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to look back and there are people that were able to use this time to their advantage and people who weren't. I guess the question is, like, how do you think this is revealing political leadership right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, right? People want to hear from Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom because they're actually running states. They're, you know, putting in place policies. They're directing equipment and supplies and aid. You know, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are important voices in this conversation right now, but they're not operationally involved in the response in the same way that governors and the president are. So I don't think there's as much sort of hunger to hear from them. I think that there's a real opportunity to connect with people right now on a number of fronts. I think that if I were an enterprising, you know, Twitch streamer or YouTuber, I would be selling, you know, effective communication over, you know, video conference seminars for like $1,000 a pop. But the leaders who are going to be the most effective are the ones who produce the best outcomes for their constituents, not necessarily, you know, who's the slickest on TV.
Any tips on combating screen time?
I've been gentler with myself for the past couple weeks. I mean, I did a whole digital detox last year and tried to limit my own screen time. I've been, you know, obviously it's been very high in the past few weeks, but I'm giving myself a break, saying like, you know, we're all stressed. We're all anxious. I think whatever people need to do to get by, I wouldn't feel shame about being on your phone more than usual, because these are real weird times.
Yeah. How do you think tech companies are faring in this new environment? Do you think opinions of them shared by the public will change post COVID-19?
Maybe. I mean, I think they've certainly done a good job of keeping their services up. I've been surprised at how few, you know, outages there have been, or, you know, Zoom hasn't been crashing, you know, Facebook hasn't been crashing. So that's pretty impressive. I also think they're doing better than they have done on things like misinformation. And removing, you know, false claims about the coronavirus. I think they're being more aggressive in that, which is a good thing. I don't know if it'll change public sentiment. I think probably people will see that these services perform, you know, a valuable function in their lives, connecting them to their friends and their families. I still think there are a lot of real questions about how these businesses operate and you know, market concentration and monopoly power and privacy concerns. I don't think that stuff's going to go away, but I think right now people have an existential threat. So it sort of feels like the concern is not as acute as it might have been a few weeks ago, but I think that's just because we're all so worried.
Yeah. I have one final question, which is like, do you want to write about other stuff, but you feel like you have to only write about stuff related to COVID?
And there's only really one story in the world right now. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of angles on that. Obviously, there's the virus angle. Then there's the economic angle of what all this shutdown is going to do to the economy and how we're going to cope with it. There are tech angles. There are, you know, there are education angles and real estate angles. I mean, there's no competing with it.
Okay. I just feel like, Kevin, you have such a mouthpiece. You know, so many people follow you and listen to you, and you have such a following as a journalist. I'm wondering in these days, like, aren't other things happening in the world that need to be pointed to? I'm just wondering, like, what stories are we missing as well, you know?
For sure, I think there are things that are happening that are not related to the virus. But it feels a little like there are going to be, I think there's going to be virus programming and virus counter programming. So I think there's going to be websites and organizations that flourish by showing people literally anything but coronavirus. And I find myself like listening to podcasts, you know, at night while I'm doing dishes or something. And I'm like, I will listen to any podcast that does not mention the word coronavirus because I'm just like burned out on stories about it. I mean, I've been watching Tiger King. I think, you know, most people have that I know. And yeah, escapism is going to be a big media niche in the next few months.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for speaking the truth and for being so awesome.
You too. Stay safe.
We hope you enjoyed this installment of Welcome to Manny's. To hear previous episodes, including conversations with Mayor London Breed and author Michael Pollan, head to kalw.org. And while you're there, consider making a donation to KALW and support the programming you love and need. To check out the full roster of upcoming talks, head to welcometomannies.com. The show was produced by David Boyer, that's me, and engineered by Gabe Graben. The theme music is These Times by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Manny Ukutial and David Perry for making this happen. We'll meet you next Friday at 5 p.m. right here on KALW.